Hey, everybody, it's the Freedom Fiends. We're back from a, broadcasting. What did I say last time? I think it's like a windowed bunker, I guess. Yeah, somewhere in the left armpit of the DPRNY. And yeehaw, Bipcot, all that good stuff. Anyway, what's up? It's Jeremy. I got John with me.
DPRNY, I like that.
Yeah, man.
I like that, DPRNY.
Yes, that's Democratic People's Republic of New Yorkistan. That is how I have long since referred to the place that I am unfortunately domiciled currently. But
that place kind of sucks.
Yeah, it does. Hopefully it's coming to a close soon, actually. It's funny, we were thinking about things to talk about before we started recording, because I feel like so many instances of my life, I feel like Dante from Clerks. You know, the whole, I wasn't even supposed to be here today type of thing. Like, this morning, both John and I woke to an email from Michael that was sent out to both of us and Nick, I think, asking if any of us wanted to record a show tonight with him, presumably. And by the time both of us had got back to him, he apparently tried to rope us both into doing it this morning. Neither of us were available. And then later in the day, it's just like, oh, yeah, why don't you guys just do a show? Maybe I'll show up. So I don't think Michael's going to make it, although it would be pretty funny if he popped a Furries on a podcast. That would be impressive of him. I wouldn't put it past him, though. We'll see. But anyway.
Yeah, maybe a surprise caller.
Yeah. So we're here. And like I said, we were trying to think about things to talk about beforehand, and I realized, well, I actually have some stuff to talk about. I don't know. Talking about escaping the DPRNY, I found out today, I've been waiting because I've done all the stuff I'm supposed to do in regards to the house to try to get the stupid thing sold. And I can't remember if I talked about this. I don't think so, because the last show I did was with Daryl. Was that the show? Yeah, the parenting show we did. So we definitely didn't talk about it then. But I've been through like a whole bunch of stuff with government, of course, and things surrounding government in the sale of my house, and you know, just all the regulations and the hurdles you have to jump over and all this garbage. And you know, it went from getting an education on termites, because apparently there was some signs of termites in my garage that I had no clue were there. But then I learned from a very good termite guy who was sent to me by somebody who I trust, who told me that basically the way he approaches all of his customers on Long Island is, listen, there's two types of houses on Long Island. There's houses that have termites and houses that are going to have termites. It's just the way it is around here. So, you know, that made me feel a little better, but like I had to deal with that. And then I'm still trying to get the permits that my mother never got for the house that she was supposed to years ago, that she claimed she was going to take care of. And I just kind of forgot about, in order to sell the house.
You just live in a termite town, Sonny.
Yeah, well, exactly. And, you know, so I have to get, you know, like I said, the building permits and all this junk, you know, for things that got things that I never dealt with and also were never a problem until I had my incident. With my viral post last year that caused such an uproar, and then I was reported to every possible agency under the sun for whatever reason people could think of, just because they were mad at me and they wanted to try to hurt me in some way. So I finally had to deal with all that stuff, and I've finally done all this, and now I've just been waiting to hear from the buyers, you know, because we signed a contract, we're officially under contract, but that doesn't really mean anything, because then now we have to deal with their bank and getting the mortgage and stuff. But I did learn today that thankfully, they finally got their mortgage commitment, I guess it's called. So they're officially starting the mortgage process, which means I should hopefully be getting a closing date soon, which is a big deal, because that's another hurdle I got to clear. Because
yeah,
I'm running desperately low on money, and I really need to sell this house so I can afford to keep living at this point. So, yeah, like I said, I found that out today. That was good news. Good and bad, because I've been waiting for this, and this is like the one thing that's been, on my mind a lot. And on the other hand, it's like, yeah, it's a relief, but now panic sets in, because there's all these things I have to do before I clear out of the house. Because as Jen has so thoughtfully pointed out recently, there's been like times where she's asked if there's things we should be doing, like packing stuff up and getting ready. And my response kept being, well, we don't even have a closing date yet. So it's not like we have to, you know, move out tomorrow. So yeah, we'll be fine. And I've only like packed up a little bit here and there. So now
that's always something that ends up happening last minute.
Well, yeah, and I was talking to my friend about this earlier, and it's funny, I never really thought of it in these terms, but I guess I was, even though like I'm packing up the house that I have now lived in for 10 and a half years, I guess, and pretty much all the worldly possessions that I currently have were acquired after I got to this house, because whatever I had beforehand was pretty much destroyed at this point, or I've moved on and gotten different things. So pretty much everything I own here, and not only do I have to pack up this entire thing and move it across the halfway, well, not halfway across the country, but into the Midwest and stuff like this. And I'm doing all these things and packing my kids up and all this stuff. But somewhere in the back of my mind, I'm still treating this as just like any other trip I would take in my life, where I always wait till the last minute to pack. No matter how many lessons I've learned from times past, no matter who I'm with at the time that's nagging me about, maybe you should pack, maybe you should take care of this, maybe you should get it out of the way, yada, yada, yada. Never listen. Always wait till the last minute. I think part of me is actually treating this momentous move in my life as just another trip.
Well, when it all boils down to it, it really is, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's one heck of an adventure, but... Yeah, so.
Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, as long as you get over the legal hurdles, then, shouldn't have too much to worry about.
Yeah, well, that is the thing. I mean, like I said, that's why I'm not counting the closing of my house as, yee-hee, I'm finally free. Because, you know, that's just one, I've kept referring to each thing as just one step in the process, because there's a bunch of steps I have to get through. Although.
Yeah, that's the best way to look at it.
Yeah, I don't really have a choice. I kind of have to, you know. But the last couple of conversations with my criminal lawyer did involve the prospect of, you know, being brought up that I am actively trying to leave the state. And now if I can actually present him with an actual closing date before the next court date, there's still a decent chance, I hope, that this thing can get settled out before we actually make it back to court the next time, which is only a couple of weeks away. But
I'm still unclear on why you leaving the state is a benefit to them. Is just that you just getting out of their hair is that what it is?
Well, that's the sales pitch from my lawyer. It was going to be
can do that in court?
Well, yeah. You could get away with so many things. Depending on, you know, the prosecutors can always get away with a ton of stuff. But if you're a defense lawyer who knows the system, and especially if you know that particular court, which my lawyer does, you know, he used to work for the DA's office, so he knows all the people involved in there. So he has ins and he has a little bit of pull, even from his position as a defense lawyer. But these are things that will be taken into consideration by a judge. As, you know, weighing the what kind of threat to the public I am, you know, type of deal. And
it's okay if you're a threat to the public of Ohio or Indianapolis or whatever.
Well, yeah, because it's no longer their jurisdiction. They don't care.
That's hilarious.
But that's basically the way. I mean, I don't think there's anybody in that courtroom who actually believes that I'm a threat to anybody. I don't think, because the fact that they've let this drag out as long as they have. I mean, when my next court date happens in a couple of weeks, I will have officially been at this for almost 11 and a half months, you know, because the process all started at the beginning of May last year. So we're talking mid-April. Yeah, we're talking almost 11 and a half months from when this all started. And the fact that I've been allowed to walk over and over and over again, and there's been no other restriction than my original bail. I'm clearly not posing a threat to anybody. They can't justify that right now. So, but yeah, basically that's what it comes down to. Proving that I'm no longer a threat to at least this community somehow has weight with the judicial system. Because both my lawyers have presented this to me over the course of this entire thing. My first lawyer said it too. If he ended up going, if I ended up sticking with him for a while longer, he was going to end up trying to use that to my, you know, he did try to bring it up in multiple conversations with the DA's office, and it was going to take it as far as the judge, but we never got there because I switched lawyers. But my second lawyer was the same thing. Once he knew that was my plan, he's like, get me information as soon as you can. You know, once you have these dates, once you've signed the contract, all this stuff, let me know and I will present all this stuff. So hopefully, if I get an actual closing date out of these folks in the next couple of days, I could present that to him and we'll see what happens. But either way, I have to close on the house because I don't have much money left. And I need money in order to move, because I have to, I'm most likely going to rent a pod or something, but I have to do it in like stages, which is going to be even more annoying. And I know it will cost even more money. because I have to have it.
Yeah, for sure.
I have to have it come here to my house and pack up whatever we're actually taking with us from here, because some of the furniture, like my couch, is going, my kitchen table and everything, because these things I've had for years. The kitchen table, actually, I got used from a buddy of mine had somebody else who owed his mom a favor, and they were giving away furniture, and his mom didn't want it. I'm like, I'll take it. I need a dining room table. It was in great shape when I got it. It's been beaten to heck over the years, so now it's like falling apart. You know, my couch was brand new when I got it.
Yeah, mine's kind of like that, too.
Yeah, my couch was brand new when I bought it, but now it's been, you know, the dogs tore at it for a while. I slept on it a whole bunch. The kids have now had at it for years. So it's like, yeah, we're just going to chuck these things. So there's actually not a lot in my 920 square foot house that actually has to be packed up and taken out of here. But I have to get a big enough pod, and I have to kind of figure all this stuff without really knowing all the details, because first we're going to pack up whatever's here that's going with us. Then the pod will have to go back up to wherever they store it for a while. And then once the court stuff is completely settled and I can actually leave for good and we have a place picked out where we're going, you know, we're going to go rent in Indiana, then we have to get the pod moved to where Jen and the girls are staying in order for them to move all the rest of the stuff out, because they're shifting half the stuff from this house over to where they're staying, because we have no idea how long it's actually going to be. So they can't be without a whole bunch of this stuff for a long period of time. So like we're gonna have to move things and shifts a couple of times, which is gonna be annoying and costly.
I'm sure like maybe like 10% of the stuff that you have to move is actually yours individually. You know what I mean? I'm sure that like the other 95% is, you know, the other people that you share the house with.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, the kid stuff definitely takes up at least 60% of what we have. And
I would imagine so.
You know, yeah, I'm sure. Because even in the garage, like I have my little corner where I have a whole bunch of tools and a whole bunch of nice stuff. But yeah, most of it's overrun with my kid stuff and even stuff that we're trying to get rid of. But it's still just all there and it's mostly kid stuff. So yeah, I don't like the majority of the stuff that I have, like my biggest, other than a couple of pieces of furniture, which even that I share with Jen for the most part, like the bed and stuff, like the biggest things I have are like my CD collection, because I still have CDs and I was still buying them up until like a couple of years ago, because I just was just like I always insisted on having books, even once I finally relented and somebody got me a Kindle and I was like, all right, fine, this is cool. But I still like to actually own books and read actual books. I still like to have CDs, even though I know having the MP3s is easier and all that stuff. But I have like this gigantic collection of CDs that's currently stashed, I think, in one of those like giant Rubbermaid tubs and another Xerox copier box on top of it filled with, I don't even know how many I have left, but like I have that. And then I had an equivalent or more of DVDs, because I still have a whole bunch of those, because I kind
of got a whole like library of them, because we don't have you know, we got bad internet out here. So
this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. I've run websites since 1996 and have used over a dozen web hosts in that time. AgoristHosting.com is the only one that hasn't broken my heart. Agorist Hosting's uptime and service is stellar, and their DDoS mitigation is the best I've seen. That's important, because if you tell the truth in this world, you'll ruffle feathers. And some people will try dirty tricks to silence your voice. No matter what the haters hit us with, Agorist Hosting keeps our websites online. If you have a mission-critical commercial presence or a world-changing activism site, you cannot tolerate any skullduggery. So go with agoristhosting.com. Have a WordPress or blog site, but you're not satisfied with performance or uptime? Or just want raw hosting? Want to pay with Bitcoin? Agorist Hosting specializes in high-performance hosting with personalized service. Go to agoristhosting.com and click on the button that says Get Hosted. That's agoristhosting.com.
It's not like we could just stream. We can stream a little bit of Netflix, you know, but after the first 15 days of the month, it starts to get real slow and you got to wait an hour for an hour long show to buffer. So, you know, we got all the South Parks on DVD and stuff like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, see, I have the capability of streaming, but I just always, again, I was one of those people, I used to like to buy the DVDs. I mean, I'd wait for sales and stuff like that and find deals on them and whatever, but I just always like to have the actual copy, even when it was possible for me to stream these things or have them stored elsewhere, like on a computer drive somewhere. Like, I still like to have them. So I just have this pile, and I actually brought myself to like go through my collection and pull out a bunch of them, and I'm like, all right, I guess I really don't have to have this one anymore. So I could throw it in a pile, because I think we may try to do a yard sale before we leave. We may not. I don't know. We'll see what happens, because we do have a lot of kids stuff that we could probably try to get rid of and probably could get money for. You know, things like one of the like the Power Wheels, the Barbie car. Like one of my sisters insisted on getting this for him a couple of years ago. My kids loved it, but they didn't use it all that often because unfortunately they got it during the time that Jen and I were split up. So they weren't here all the time, so they didn't get to enjoy it as much. And then they quickly outgrew it. So this thing, like those things go for like, you know, $250, $300 brand new. And it's still in pretty darn good condition. So I'm thinking, you know, we could totally get some money for that. Hey, you're back. You were
Sorry, as soon as I talk about my internet, it curses me.
See, you shouldn't do that, John. Don't aggravate the internet gods.
Well, we didn't miss a beat though, did we?
No, of course not. But yeah, so I didn't even know you were gone. I was just yakking away. But yeah, I was just saying, you know, I managed to get rid of some of my DVDs because I'll try to, you know, I figure if we're doing a yard sale anyway, it doesn't hurt to throw a, you know, box of them out there and say, like, you know, three of them for $5 or whatever and see how many people actually want to pay. And if not, I'll dump them at the local library because they take, you know, they take donations of DVDs and books and everything. So whatever I can't manage to sell, I figure I'll just dump it all. I'll just donate it all anyway. And, you know, so I'm lessening even more the little amount of stuff that I do have. Like, probably after that, the next biggest thing will be my tool collection. I'm not getting rid of those. I will haul those everywhere with me because I know I'm going to need them.
Yeah, the only items that are actually, like, really, like, just mine in the house are the electronics and the drug paraphernalia.
Oh, yeah, I totally forgot about that stuff. That too. I have multiple laptops. I have my mixer. I have all my recording equipment. Yeah, yeah, that too. But that doesn't take up that much space because I use laptops.
Yeah,
for
everything. Exactly.
So I could stack all three laptops and the mixer on top of each other and carry all four of them together relatively easily. So
yeah, you know, I hate to bury the lead, but before I forget it, when you were talking about convincing the judge, you know, to let you go and stuff, I was reminded of this article I saw earlier where DMX is playing. He's looking at 5 years for tax evasion. The rapper DMX, and
is this over the Bitcoin thing, or is this over something just unrelated?
He's been just dodging taxes for years intentionally because he, you know, taxation.
Not all heroes wear capes. Thank you for your service. Yep.
I mean, he's also been arrested for impersonating a police officer because I think he stole a cop car and was riding around in it for fun.
Why?
Yeah,
I stopped paying attention a long time ago.
He apparently pulled up behind another cop and tried to pull him over with the cop car that he stole just for fun.
I was about to say that's like a sitcom episode, and then I realized it is because it's been done many times before, and immediately like a Friends episode popped into my head of like, you know, trying to impersonate a cop and getting busted by an actual cop.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, he's looking at like 5 years for tax evasion, and apparently it was real news. I looked it up. Apparently, one of his plans is to play his songs for the judge.
And that's supposed to do what?
I don't know.
Convince him that he's a vital member of society who needs to be free? I don't know. I think people have actually produced albums from behind bars, so I don't think he has a legitimate claim there, unfortunately. Although I do give him props for creativity.
Yeah, he's awesome, man. He's always awesome. I had the opportunity to see him at Coachella, but I was too busy tripping and I had no clue who DJ Snake was. So, you know, I wasn't there when he came out during that performance.
Like I said, I haven't paid attention to that scene in so long that I didn't know any of this stuff had actually.
Well,
happened.
I mean, D- DMX is just like, you know, a jester that I just like pay attention to. You know what I mean? Because like, have you ever seen him, his episode on Dr. Phil?
No. Like I said, the last time I had his, was his first album, the Rough Rider Anthem. I think that was like, that's as far, like, that's as far as I got with him. Like I had that album. I may actually still, speaking of the CDs that I have upstairs, yeah. I may actually still have that among my collection, but I never went any further. Like I love most of that album, but I don't think I ever went further than that.
Dude. You got to do yourself a favor and watch the DMX with Dr. Phil, because he's like analyzing him and he's like, so you have 12 children now, or you have 11 children. And he's like, 11 and 12 on the way. And he's all talking about like his welfare and his child support and all that, or his child support rather. And he's like talking about all the times he got arrested, and Dr. Phil brings up like his arrest record on like the big screen and stuff, and it's like ridiculous. There's like hundreds of charges. And he's like, oh man, why you gotta do me like that, Phil? It's hilarious, dude.
That's great. Well, I've seen ones like that before, because they've done that. There's like, you know, sports figures who have had that same situation. I'm trying to remember, there was one guy, I think it was Antonio. I think that was his name. Cromartie. He played for the Jets at one point. He was a cornerback, but he was another one. He had like, you know, something ridiculous. So like, you know, anywhere between 9 and 12 children he had fathered with, you know, however many different women. And just, you know, when he would get questions about it, he would have that same type of attitude. It's like, well, I mean, come on, man. You got to, I'm all for, you know, doing whatever you want as long as you're not hurting anybody. But I mean, you can't possibly be being a good father to all of these children.
Oh, yeah.
No matter how much money you can throw at them when they're all spread out, especially in situations like that, because you know it's always people like all around the country, because that's how it happens. When people travel, they're like, oh, I stop in the same cities for games or gigs or whatever it is over and over and over again. So they make friends with women in certain areas, and that's where the kids all pop up. It's like, yeah, you can throw money at them, but come on, man. Like, you've got all these kids spread out. Like, how many times a year do you see any of them?
Well, it was just funny because he was owning it all, and he's just like, that's making me broke now. And he's saying, you know, they're all charging me the rate of when I was hot, and I'm not hot no more.
Well, again, that's one of those things, like, part of me wants to be like, well, he's got a point, because, you know, if you're going to have a system based on that, it should be reflective of what he's capable of producing right now. But still, man, come on, you got yourself into that situation. I'm sorry, as much as you know, there's always going to be that part of me that wants to give him a pound for that, be like, yeah, what up, man. You know, on the other part of me is like, responsibility, mofo. Come on, seriously.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, say owning up to the fact that you fathered these kids is one thing. You know, complaining about the fact that you got to pay for them, that's a stretch. I don't know. I don't even know if I could have went that route before I was a father. You know, definitely not now.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy, man. I didn't mean to take it in that tangent, but
it's fine. Like, I mean, like I said originally, I give him props for the tax evasion thing. You know, theft evasion, as you and I would probably refer to it as.
Well, it's like a lot of rappers, and like I don't mean to go SJW here, but a majority of them have been black. You know, Lauryn Hill, Wesley Snipes. Was it Wesley Snipes? I think it was Wesley.
Well,
Snipes.
He's an actor, but yeah. Yeah, didn't he actually go to jail for, I think?
Lauryn Hill.
Oh, that's right. I forgot that Lauryn Hill.
Yeah, and there was another one. Somebody else went to jail for taxes. And I mean, they're trying to throw 5 years at him, and he's going to get some kind of time. I know it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's unfortunate. And that's, although, I mean,
Lauryn Hill, she said that like taxation was slavery pretty much when she was getting arrested for it.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, now because at first when you said it, I'm like, I think I remember that. But yeah, now I remember that part. So yeah, that triggered me. I do remember her saying that, although she didn't mean it in the same way that somebody like one like us would say it, because I do know people that try to make that argument, you know.
Yeah, I mean, but I think she's pretty close to our side of things. I wouldn't say like she's not. I wouldn't say she's a communist. You know what I'm saying? Any of them, they might have some of that rhetoric, but especially that old Fuji stuff. It's like very, like I would say individualist. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's funny you said the thing about the communists, though, because it's possible that they like. I haven't paid attention to so long, but I do remember hearing certain things back in the day, and I've seen certain things from people like her and other people like her too, which I could kind of see that. But it's interesting because I actually just had a conversation the other night with Mance Rayder, the guy who does the Free Man Behind the Wall podcast and wrote the book Freedom Through Memedom.
Oh yeah, awesome.
Yeah, and we were actually talking about that you know, the fact that part of the reason there's so many difficulties with people having conversations is the fact that they just assume like that blanket thing, like if they think there's any communist rhetoric coming from somebody, it's like, "Oh, they're a communist." It's like, "Well, yeah." And I even said it during that show with him that it's like, you know, you could like a lot of people who say stuff like that don't really think it through, cuz you could actually meet two people who both identify as being like, say a communist, but pick any ideology, it doesn't matter. But you know, say you could meet two people who both identify that, and they could both have wildly different views on pretty much everything, because just because people claim a certain moniker or a certain title or a certain, you know, a label, doesn't mean they actually agree on the definition of that label of somebody else who uses that same label.
Exactly. And that's the thing that kind of, you know, definitely is a problem, especially now with how divided everybody is. You know, everybody immediately at the beginning of a conversation, they want to find out what team you're on and everything. And, you know, it's getting even more ridiculous than it's ever been before.
Yeah, although I mean, part of that I think is a good idea, because that's part of the conversation that Mance and I had too. Is actually like, you kind of like, if you want to actually try to have a conversation with anybody, or you know, whether you know, an online debate or whatever, or even just a discussion about something, it is a good idea to try to figure out where they're coming from. So knowing how they identify is usually helpful. Yeah. But the problem is, and I think I would agree with you with what you were saying before, that certain people stop at that point. Once they get that information, exactly. Once they get, oh, this is a communist, this person says they're a Marxist, this person says they're an ANCAP, this person says they're a libertarian socialist, this person says they're a Democrat, a progressive, whatever. Like, once they get that information, they stop and they make a decision based on what their collective of that term means. And they're just,
or they'll do it over one issue. Even like me, I consider myself a very like free market oriented person, but I got called a communist by a bunch of people when that whole Standing Rock thing was going on, because I was on the native side on that, and I saw it as a from a property rights perspective on that issue. You know what I'm saying?
The Central Scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN, or virtual private network, from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
But from a lot of the Liberty Hangout types and stuff, I was called a communist, you know, and then like that's a deal breaker. And I know that like the conspiracy crowd that I come from, that like 9/11 is a deal breaker for them, or like vaccines will be a deal breaker for them. Like they don't want to talk to anybody that disagrees with them on this one issue because they're a shill or whatever. And, you know, I think that it, like you said, it is important to figure out where people are coming from, but we're getting to a place where we aren't learning anything when we want to stay in echo chambers. You know what I mean? I think I've learned a lot in the past year by trying to give commies and racists a chance a little bit more. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, because I've done the same thing over somewhere around the same time span too. I've talked about this before over the last year or so. I took a hard, you know, pretty much a stop in my thought process and everything, and was like, I need to reassess a whole bunch of things, and that included opening doors that I had closed to certain groups of people that I had blindly and kind of ignorantly just collectivized as this, you know, mass of people that all believe this one particular thing, which meant they were all necessarily this other particular thing, and therefore I could defeat this one argument, which meant I could defeat their entire argument, which meant I didn't have to deal with them. You know, no matter who, you know, pick a group, whoever it was, like that was the type of attitude. And I was like, well, that's not right. That obviously, you know, that's very closed off thinking. Something's wrong here. So I've opened my doors to, you know, and opened try to have more conversations with people that would generally be viewed by the people that I used to be very close with as, you know, leftists or communists. I mean, I get called a commie all the time these days, which is just hysterical to me, you know, because I'm like, please, even anywhere in my history, please show me where I was advocating, you know, even before I was an anarchist, where was I ever, even when I was a progressive, liberal, useful idiot, I was never advocating anything along the lines of communism, you know, maybe some socialist stuff and, from that type of leftist perspective, but not even that. Even I wasn't even a big proponent of welfare, but even back then. So, you know, please find it to anywhere in my timeline where this shows up, and you know, I'll wait. I know, because I know it's not coming, but this is the type of stuff that gets thrown at me for exactly what you said. You take a certain position on one issue and you've now just been grouped in with this other group, and you just, you know, I bust my buddy Dave's, you know, behind about this all the time, about the term communist, because he just, pretty much everybody to the left of him is a communist. Well, him and Hans Hermann Hoppe. Although although my other co-host Andre tried to argue that Dave doesn't believe Andre is a communist either, and I just simply told him, you know, just give it time, because, well, you know, you've pushed back on a couple of things. Give it another couple of months. I'm sure Dave will find a reason to call you a communist too. But yeah, I mean,
and you know, it's interesting how you go ahead.
Oh no, go ahead.
Well, it's interesting how you said like when you're a useful idiot too, and I think that is kind of like the situation that many people on, you know, those ends of the debate, like especially the communist end of the debate, they don't, you know, Marx is served up in college, even in high school. They don't show you Mises or any of that. And I know this is a played out meme, but it's very easy to look around the world and recognize that, oh yeah, like, corporations have heavy influence on things, you know, wow, like there's a lot of inequality in the world, and that creates a lot of problems. And then, you know, everything that they're taught about economics pushes them in this direction of solutions. And you have especially like artists and stuff like that, musicians who spend a lot of their time on tour, you know, but they really care about things, but they, you know, they're not necessarily diving real deep into studying the other side of economics, you know what I'm saying? So I definitely feel that there's just a tendency to kind of go for the low-hanging fruit, or for lack of a better term, in the philosophy, and just the easy solutions and the things that it sounds like everybody else is saying.
Well, yeah. And that, you know, like you said, I mean, that's pretty much how most people are taught, you know, kind of, well, indoctrinated, I, you know, is the term that I would use, but again, that's another thing I'm trying to do. I'm trying to be less confrontational with my language, which is really difficult for me.
Cell 411 is a great free app for Android and iPhone. It allows you to set up public and private cells for dealing with crime, emergencies, setting up neighborhood watch, activism, and even protecting your kids from bullies on the street or at school. Cell 411 gives your cells turn-by-turn directions to your location with one touch on your phone. There is also a Bluetooth panic button available that can be worn on your wrist, belt, or around your neck. Cell 411 has real-time chat for each alert so you can discuss the incident with family or friends in real-time video streaming. The video is stored on Cell 411's servers so your evidence cannot be deleted if your phone is taken or destroyed. Cell 411 has decentralized ride sharing that allows for payment in any form, crypto, barter, silver, cash, etc. Cell 411 does not take a cut of your fare. Get Cell 411 free on Google Play and the iTunes Store, or go to getcell411.com. That's getcell411.com.
Because I have such a tendency to be confrontational in pretty much all aspects of life, but the...
Oh, yeah, I especially, like, when it comes to, like, cops, military, stuff like that, I have hit backspace so many times recently when I'm just like, maybe I shouldn't say that because I really want to right now, but
yep.
It would not be productive.
wouldn't be prudent. Wouldn't be prudent at all. Dana Carvey used to do a great, yeah, it was, did a great yep. impression of George Bush doing that. Wouldn't be pretty.
Yeah, classic.
But yeah, no, I've done the same thing too, where I used to never hit that backspace button. I would always let fly with whatever I would read over quickly my rants that I wrote back to people just to check for spelling errors and stuff. But other than that, I would pretty much just let it fly with what came out at the first shot. But now I've definitely, there's been so many times that either because I've been like, I've had the thought that it has crossed my mind that, oh, it's just not even worth it to get into this right now. Or... yeah, probably not the best way to go about it. Like, you know, wouldn't be prudent. So, yeah, maybe I'll wait. Maybe I'll think about it some more. Maybe I just won't respond at all, that type of thing. Because, yeah, unfortunately, it doesn't really result in anything positive. And since I'm trying to focus more on solutions these days, I mean, I keep preaching this. This is what I've been trying to do for the last 6 months or so. With my shift and everything since I closed my business and I want to, you know, get out of here and do all these things. Like, that's what I've really been trying to focus on a lot of my work is instead of just complaining about things, you know, and pointing out what's wrong, because while that's important, plenty of people already do that. Well, let's get to the solutions thing. And that's another reason why I started, like I said, opening those doors that I had closed off a long time ago and talking to people that I, you know, even 9 to 12 months ago, I wouldn't even considered having a serious conversation with. And it's been very productive for me. It's like you said, same thing for me. I actually feel a lot better now because I can have a lot more productive conversations with a lot more people. And I have a lot more ideas that have been put in front of me that I don't think would have made it to me, at least not now, if I had stayed in those same type of echo chambers that I had been in. And, you know, I think it's only going to be better for my family and I. And even if some of these ideas I end up rejecting all over again, at least I gave them another honest exploration with a new set of eyes because I've learned a lot since I originally, you know, shut the door, you know?
Yeah. And even if you reject those ideas, you don't have to reject those people per se. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, that too.
Like, if somebody's trolling you online or something like that, then that's, like, a different story. But, like, you know what I mean.
Oh, yeah. It's funny.
In general, like, whole groups of people to cancel them out, that is counterproductive.
Well, sure. And that's actually a really good point, too, that it reminds me a conversation I was having with my buddy, Daniel Cuellar, who does the Peaceful Anarchism podcast. Used to be my co-host in the Seeds of Liberty. But I was talking to him about a bunch of stuff today. And this topic actually came up with, you know, the fact that I'm trying to move and, you know, we're relocating to a completely different state, someplace we've never been before. It's going to be a new adventure for the entire family. And the plan, which hopefully goes according to, or things go according to, rather, I should say, would be that we get there relatively quickly. Jen gets a job because she's the one who has the, you know, the good degrees and can get the higher paying job right away. And she starts doing that. And then I get to do the stay at home dad thing, which I have been jealous of very much so of my buddy Danilo for years now, because he's been doing that for years. His wife ended up, you know, after she spent the first couple of years home with the kids, she ended up going back to work full time because she could make more money at what she was doing. And he's been playing stay at home, unschooling dad for a few, at least 3 years now, I think, and actually maybe four at this point. And I've always wanted to do that because that was actually a plan Jen and I had had years ago. That was supposed to be the plan, but then things went south with us for a while. But they're better now, as I've explained on the show. But now I'm hopefully going to get a chance to do that. And I know that I'm going to be the one who's going to be taking them to all the different group stuff, you know, the group play that we do and whatever, and the homeschooling groups and whatever else we the other people that we try to meet up with, so that, you know, to build a base for the kids and have, you know, other experiences for them to learn from while they're doing this, while we're trying this whole unschooling thing with them. I know I'm going to have to interact with these people. And I also know that there's a good chance, and especially, you know, taking from poor Danilo's experience, he's been immersed in this for years, and he's surrounded by all these people that he considers friends, but he's like every single one of them, for the most part, is like a Bernie Sanders socialist.
Oh, wow.
You know,
That's how it is with all my rave friends and stuff, which are most of the people who, like, you know, I, you know, deal with, you know, on herb matters and such and things like that, and the most of the people who populate the Facebook feed that I see, and you know, if I'm going to go out to a social event, these are the people I'm going to run into. All them people are really gung-ho for that. Some of them even campaigned for him, so I definitely feel you there.
Yeah. And, you know, I was remarking to Danilo earlier that I expect to have to deal with a lot of that, although hopefully moving to like the Midwest, I'll deal with more like Republican housewives and stuff like that. But you never know. But either way, it's not going to be necessarily people who agree. They may agree with me on the whole unschooling, homeschooling aspect, but they may not agree with me on much else. But in order for my kids to have the opportunity to meet other kids and, you know, make their decision on who they want to be friends with and stuff like that, you know, like, I'm going to have to most likely bite my tongue in a lot of situations, which is going to be tough for me because, you know, like a lesson I took from Michael years ago was the fact that, you know, having a radio show, especially, but even a podcast, you know, you do really have the opportunity to have like one-way conversations with the world. I mean, sure, you can get feedback and you can have comments turned on different mediums and you could actually respond, or you could just ignore all of it and keep putting out your show constantly, knowing that people are listening, but refusing to actually respond to them. So you can literally have a one-way conversation with the world and get this type of stuff off your chest and out there. And, you know, people like my buddy Danilo, he that's enough for him, being able to do this type of stuff, doing his podcast. Go ahead.
That was actually how much of my first book was written, because, you know, I think, as I've said many times before, I've been pretty much anti-authoritarian my whole life and I've gotten in trouble for it, but I didn't really know why on an intellectual level, and I didn't really, I researched stuff early on, but once I started getting really heavy into psychedelic drugs and like I got successful out of nowhere, I started thinking all this weird stuff and like thinking that like there was a chance to change things, which I still believe. Man, I lost my thought.
Well, you were talking about the writing of your first book and how you got there.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, so I started going through that phase. And you know that beginning phase, like that Alex Jones phase, when you're like in everybody's face about it?
Yeah,
you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, well, I refer to it as the angry anarchist phase.
So
for people in our circles.
I was going through that, and like I was kind of making a lot of people that in my network like pretty angry and stuff, especially like some of the dealers that I was involved with, because I was calling a bunch of attention to myself and thus them, and
which is a big no-no.
You know. yeah so I would get in arguments with them and stuff. I mean, I wasn't really doing it on purpose, and I tried to get out of the game, but that's another story. But we would get in these arguments, and I would like bite my lip most of the times, because there were some blow-ups, you know what I mean? And after them blow-ups, I would just bite my lip and then just come home and like write, you know what I mean, my response of what I would have said to them. And like half of my first book is pretty much consists of stuff like that.
Well, that's great. That's funny. But that's great, though. I mean, same type of thing. Exactly. Just being able to vent in your own way and not necessarily having to deal with those, whatever the circumstances, you don't actually have to deal with those people, but you still get it out there. And yeah, it could provide great content. So for people like I said, and I think you would probably fall into this category too, but like people like my buddy Danilo, like that's enough. Like being able to get that out, then they're able to relax and be okay with these people that you know you're going to have to deal with, because you know you're going to have to be okay in order to continue these relationships, whether the personal, business, whatever. You know you're going to have to deal with it. And being able to vent in these other avenues is good enough for you. Me, even with like, I'm still technically, well, yeah, I'm actively part of four podcasts or radio shows, you know, because I still do, you know, even with our new schedule, I still end up doing The Fiends about once a week. I still do the Seas of Liberty once a week. We've been doing that for over 3 years now. I started doing my own podcast, Abolitionist Abstractions, which we tried to talk about, I think, a little bit the last time you and I tried to do a podcast that I accidentally deleted.
Wait, we did Abolitionist Abstractions. We just didn't do one on here. It was for The Fiends that you deleted.
Yes, no, but we talked about the fact that we did it on the Abolitionist.
Abstractions.
I've been doing that, and then I am still a Lulbert, and I usually do at least one show a month for that. Even with all that, and even getting invited on other shows and having other, you know, because now I'm finally trying to get back into the writing thing again, you know, after I wrote that one really long piece, and I've tried to write more blog posts recently, because I do realize that seems to get more traffic on Steemit, or, you know.
Yeah, you've been doing a good job with the posts and stuff like that.
Well, I put stuff out once a day, but I've still, maybe two of them a week now are blog posts, if I can actually get them out. But even with all those avenues, I still have so much in me that I still, like, it's hard for me to have normal conversations with people that don't end up turning into ways I can figure out how to work the whole, you know, freedom angle into it. You know, because I found myself doing that even with like the people that came to my house to deal with all these issues that kept coming up as I'm trying to sell, like with the termite issue and then the permits and all, like the contractor and the termite guy, like all these people coming through and having conversations with them, like I kept finding myself, they would still end up heading in that direction. And I was just like, I tried so hard, but it's heading here anyway. All right, we're just going to go with it. And it's just like, no, man, you can't do this all the time.
That is totally my life, man.
I'm like you can't do it all the time, because you're going to need these people. They need to be, you know, because the one that I was dancing the tightrope the worst with was the termite guy, who actually, I found out just before he came to my house, is actually, you know, ironically for me, of course, a former New York City fire department guy. So I mean, I don't think he knows who I am.
You hate them. So, we all know you hate them.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. But like, I don't know if my cousin who set me up with this guy did this as like a little jab at me, or he
like
just,
like a joke or a mean jab.
Well, like kind of like here, I'm going to help you out. I got a really good guy for you to help you out with this problem, but here's the catch type of deal, you know, kind of like, you know, this is what you get for starting all this problem in the first place type of thing. But the guy didn't seem to know who I am in that regard or anything, because no conversation of that started. But it was interesting, because here's this guy who, you know, my guards are up automatically because I know what he used to do for a living. But here he is in a totally different line of work, with his own company, actually. And now he's, when he's, you know, talking price with me, he's telling me that he's, first of all, he's going to give me a discount because of who my cousin is. And then second of all, he's like, and if, you know, if you pay with cash, then we can. And I'm like, right away, I'm like, this is, of course, the hypocrisy that I see with so many government workers or former government workers that, of course, they don't see at all, that, you know, it's totally all right for them to make deals with this for their business. Oh, sure. I'll chop the tax off if you give me cash, because they'll just pocket that money and not report it. But, and, you know, which if they were able to turn around and do something like that to you, they most likely would, you know, turn you in for some silly little infraction like that, you know, even though the penalty is the same no matter what. Eventually a guy with a gun is going to show up. And if you keep resisting him, even though you haven't actually done anything wrong, you could end up being shot. but they don't see that hypocrisy. And it's like, that part I had to bite my tongue on really hard. I wanted to say something about it so badly and just be like, you don't see the problem here? Like, do you not see the disconnect? How you used to get paid for all those years and now what you're trying to avoid? And, you know, because he definitely didn't seem like, you know, an anarchist, maybe a little libertarian-ish. But for the most part, we just talked about the, you know, how bad the termite problem here is on Long Island. And he was extremely interested in hearing about the fact that I wanted to leave here. Not only that I wanted to leave New York, but that I wanted to leave here to start a bison ranch in the Midwest. You know, like, he was fascinated by that. And coincidentally, the last time when he actually showed up here to do the work was the day that I was actually feeding my snake. And I kind of offhand mentioned that to him as we were talking, because I was like, I just have to stay inside to pay attention to the snake. And, you know, so if you could just call me if you need me. And like, then he was all interested in that, and like wanted to watch the snake eat. So that was nice. It proved to me that I can have these conversations, but it took the fact that
you don't actually hate firefighters.
I don't hate firefighters
who are just joining us.
No, I don't hate firefighters. I have a problem with all government workers, and I have referred to government workers as parasites, and that included government firefighters, which New York City Fire Department, the FDNY, is government workers. They're not a volunteer force like we have out here on Long Island, which I have absolutely no problem with. And as I tried to point out so many times during the entire ordeal that happened with me, even from the very beginning, which should have squashed it originally, I kept trying to point out that not only have I never said I had a problem with volunteer firefighters, and I had mountains of evidence, like different podcasts I had done where I had talked about these things prior to this whole thing happening. And I had actually referred to the fire department, because I had repeatedly said in debates with people who tried to argue against my position with basically, you know, it's always, you know, how, you know, without the government, the chaos, yada, 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 and how are you going to do all these things, the roads, blah, blah, blah. And a lot of people go to fire departments right away too. And I was always prepared for that because I've lived on Long Island for the better part of my life, and we've always had volunteer departments here where, you know, they do get I think they end up getting some funding from the state, but for the large part it's just volunteer fire department. It's the people that volunteer, and for the most part most of the money comes through donations. And ever since even before I bought my house, when I first moved to Levittown and I was renting a place for the first year and a half, as soon as I was out on my own, I started donating to the local fire department every time they showed up at my door. And they usually showed up between 2 and 4 times a year for either a general donation, or they also happened to be in the town that I lived in. They also happened to be the ones that went around and painted the street, the house numbers on the curbs to make it easier for delivery drivers to see, because the town didn't actually do that for people. But the volunteer fire department offered to do it as long as they could get enough donations throughout the year. So they were the ones who went around to do it. So like immediately I started to, every time they came to the door, I gave them pretty much whatever I had in my wallet. Like I would just hand over to them. Like, all right, guys, thanks. Without even blinking. And I've always done that. Continued it when I bought my house. And I upped my donations after I got a couple of the volunteer fire department guys that were in my town ended up becoming clients of mine. I ended up upping my donation. It just seemed like the right thing to do, because like they were giving me a lot of business, and I was like, well, the best I could do for you is up the donations for you guys. So I'll throw a little more money your way. And then when my kids were born, and there was a couple of incidents with medical situations when they were younger. One of the times we just instinctively called 911. You know, this was before I was an anarchist, but like without even thinking, like that's just, you know, oh my God, panic. What do you do? Call 911. And the experience was horrible because it took the ambulance a while to get there, even though we're in a pretty, you know, centralized location that actually has extremely good access because it's right near two major roads in this area, you know, like one just off of one of them. So it shouldn't have been an issue, but it took a while to get there. And then they didn't take us to the closest hospital. They took us to the county hospital, which we begged them not to do because I've had nothing but bad experiences with this place over the years.
And they take you where they take you, huh?
Yeah, even though there's another hospital much closer up the, you know, like less than 2 miles from my door. is another hospital. They took us to the county hospital, which is 5+ miles away. And then they wouldn't allow a transfer from there either. We had to go through a mountain of bureaucratic red tape just to be able to get her out of there, to the point where I almost got arrested because I was threatening to take my daughter and take her myself. They weren't going to let me take her to the next hospital that I wanted to take her to because she had already signed it and it was a nightmare. But right after that, I happened to speak to one of the new fireman clients that I had, and he was like, "Oh, never call 911. Always call us, the volunteer fire department." He's like, "Yeah, call our EMS every time." He's like, "I guarantee you, we will be there. We will be there faster, and we will take you wherever you want us to go." Within reason, obviously. But he's like, "Well, he's like, you name the hospital within the area, we're there." And after that, anytime we needed it, we called them, and the experience was amazing. They were there within minutes, and they always asked us where we wanted to go. And we weren't stuck with a bill later. We weren't stuck with the bill for the ambulance later on, as the county does. And so once again, once that happened, I upped my donation again. So I was throwing every time they came to the door, I was, because they also, they put things in your mail, they send things through the mail too, in case they don't actually catch people at their doors. And I would just ignore all of those because I knew I would be home every time they came to the door, because I always was. It just always managed to work out that way. I'm like, now not only was I handing them everything that was in my pocket, I was making sure I found other money to give to them too. Because I'm like, you guys are providing this great service. So like for years, I talked about this, the fact that I don't have a problem, like specifically, not just like with some people who do government type work. No, specifically firefighters. I've talked about this for years. So the fact that anybody could walk away from what happened thinking that I just blanket hate firefighters is so insane.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Like I said, it's just the government kind, which unfortunately the New York City firefighters are. They get paid a salary that comes out of the extortion known as taxation. So they get lumped in that regard with every other government worker to me, no matter what good they may actually do, which is that when you come from that starting point, it taints everything for me. So that's, Again, though, I mentioned earlier, I'm trying to tame down my rhetoric, so I don't have these conversations as much anymore. I definitely wasn't going to have it with the termite guy who was a former FDNY and was already giving me a huge break on, I ended up paying I saved over $200 just because it was my cousin that hooked me up, and because he cut the tax off. So like, I was definitely not about to have that conversation with him, but I try not to have these conversations with too many people anymore. Although again, as I was saying earlier, despite me being able to get these rants out in places like this, I still have it in me. And if I'm asked directly, I know I'm not going to be able to back down from it. I'll always end up to go into rant mode at some point, because this really is. It's become, my life. The whole, I did activism not in a way that a lot of other people do. Like, I took to the podcasting route and like trying to get content out in different ways rather than doing like the out in the public activism. But I've been contacted by so many people from so many different walks of life, even before what happened to me last year. So like, I know I've reached people in so many different ways. So like, whatever. This has been me. This is what I'm about. I mean, there's other things in my life, obviously my kids too, but when I'm not with them or even when I am, I can't help thinking like this. I can't turn it off.
Oh, I know how that is, man. Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's really crazy, man. One thing, like when those conversations arise, and you need to go into it, it's like the best thing to upfront is to just like make sure that the person knows or at least thinks that you respect their opinion. You know what I mean? And be like, I don't really care if I change your mind. You know what I mean? Because even though you do, just saying that, kind of like puts people at ease, makes them feel like they're not in a debate. And then you could express yourself and then they could think about it. You know what I'm saying? Without their defenses.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea. I never thought of that. Like I said, I have tried to. I'm trying to soften my stance in a lot of ways when I come at people, and unless they know what I'm about. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, prefacing it with actually saying it, probably not a bad idea. Yeah, I should probably try to incorporate that because.
Because I think people probably respect that, especially nowadays. Because it's like, and in all reality, I think you just even have more of a chance of influencing them that way. And if not, at least then they'll reciprocate that and then respect your opinions. Because once you say that and then you go into why taxation is theft or whatever, it's going to be real hard for them to give you the typical BS in a rude way. They're going to have to at least be nice about it. And then you'll actually maybe be able to have a polite discussion about these topics, you know?
Yeah, because you definitely have to get, you have to get in the door to start the conversation. So if you come with,
yeah, people just got defenses up, and you know, there's always.
The 6th annual Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest will be held at the Circle Pine Center in Delton, Michigan, just outside of Kalamazoo, from Thursday, June 21st through Monday, June 25th. There will be all sorts of activities in a family and adult-friendly environment. Scheduled speakers include Dana Martin, Brett Benat, Prof. CJ, and Scott Horton. Round up your friends and family members and get them registered today at mplfest.org. That's Mike, Papa, Lima, Fest. .org. Dogs welcome. Longer leashes recommended.
People got senses for what they disagree with. And I just think that we're always set up into this I'm right, you're wrong debate. And with our ideas, they're so weird and different that I think even just introducing them to somebody, especially in a nice way, is it's huge. And especially if you are upfront in a conversation like that, or you try to make sure that the conversation is like cool upfront in like a nonchalant kind of way, they might go away from the conversation thinking, oh wow, that was a really nice person. I wonder if this philosophy influences how they are. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I mean, because another thing, of course, is just having that, you know, when you disarm people like that, if they don't think you're trying to convince them, then yeah, they let their guard down, and they may, whatever you say to them, they may even if they walk away from it saying, oh, what a nice guy, but the idea is still kind of, you know, oh, utopian, whatever they say it, you know, whatever, however they take it, you know, even if they walk away like that, you've still planted that seed. And, you know, maybe a couple months later, maybe a year later, something will occur. Something either will occur to them, or something will happen in their life where they'll just be like, where they'll be, well, they'll be at a point where they're going to be reassessing things anyway. And that exactly. Seed that's there will now be, will be brought to the forefront. It's like, oh yeah, now all of a sudden I have a connection between what that guy John was saying a year ago and what just happened to me now. And now it makes sense. Wait a minute, maybe he's not so utopian, you know? And that, you know, that definitely happens a lot. I've had plenty of people before over the past 5 years or so that I've been in this whole game where that have come to me later on and told me they, you know, either couldn't stand me at the very beginning, or they, you know, they vehemently disagreed with me about something, or they saw some meme I made and they thought it was stupid, and then came back to me later on. It's like, oh, now I understand what you're talking about. You know, actually a number of friends of mine were semi like converted eventually through listening to different podcasts of mine, or having different interactions with me way back when, and it just took them a little time to figure it out. So you never know how long this stuff is going to take. You know, same thing happened to me when I first started out. I've told the story before, my buddy Nolan, I had just met him. It was the very first time we had actually met, and like we had either texted back and forth or like Facebook messaged back and forth, but I was introduced to him through a local Libertarian Party member who I had gotten introduced to through the local Tea Party chapter leader who I had originally went to when I decided I had enough of the government and I wanted to do something, and I was looking for answers, and I found the Tea Party first. Then I was like, these people seem like they want to take on the government. Let me go see what they're about. And when I talked to the head of the Tea Party in New York, she was like, Yeah, you sound more like a libertarian. Let me point you in the direction of my friend who runs the Libertarian Party in one of the counties by you. And I was like, I didn't even really know what the libertarians were, but I was like, okay. And then when I met her and talked to her after like a couple of conversations, she's like, yeah, I'm going to put you in touch with this guy, Nolan. He's closer to your age, but he also, how should I put this? He's a little more radical than I am, and you seem like you might fit in with him a little better.
That's funny, man. They kept on tossing you along.
Well, yeah, because apparently my ideas were too radical for the Tea Party and too radical for the Libertarian Party right off the bat. And when I met Nolan and he agreed to meet with me at the local Starbucks, like we were going to sit down and have some coffee, have a conversation or whatever. We ended up talking for a while, but he was the first person who ever introduced the term voluntarism to me. Like, I had never even heard it before. And I immediately was like, well, what? Because he either referred to himself as a voluntarist or referred to the philosophy of voluntarism. And I was like, what's that? I don't know what that is. He explained, and I was like, oh, that's interesting. And I basically walked away from that conversation thinking, cool guy. He's got some really crazy utopian ideas, though. I think we can work together on some of this stuff, though. So, yeah, let's, we'll see where this goes, but basically, like what I was describing before, totally utopian. 6 to 8 months later, as the joke goes, it was pretty much almost 6 to 8 months later. I think it was like 7.5 months or something like that. I called him up one day, and the only thing I said was, you're right. I hate you. F you. And I hung up. And he knew exactly what I meant. It didn't matter that conversation had taken place like the first time we ever met, like almost 8 months before that. He knew exactly what I meant because I got a text message a few minutes later with just like a smiley face, like, I told you so.
That's hilarious. I wonder what the space between libertarianism and voluntarism is, because that's where you were at. I wonder what that space looks like.
Yeah, I don't really know. Like, even when I first met him, I think I was still, there might've been a couple other things.
Like, what parts did you disagree with him on?
Well, I was still held up on national defense. That was the last stumbling block for me. But I think there was still maybe one or two other things at that point that I still hadn't really considered.
Who will kill the foreign babies?
Yeah, you're cutting out a little bit, but yeah, who will kill the foreign babies? I was thinking of it in a purely defensive, at least I thought I was thinking of it in a defensive posture, not thinking of, the wars that the U.S. starts, but just in general, like national defense, that can't be done, that type of thing. And like I said, there might have been a couple other things I was hung up on. I can't really remember at the time now. It's been 5 years, and my memory about that is I try to not remember a lot of those things, a lot of the way I was back then. But that was the one thing that we definitely vehemently disagreed on. Like I was still a very strict constitutionalist at that point. Like that, that was still at the point that I was reading passages of the Constitution to my kids as part of their bedtime stories when they were under a year and a half old. Yeah, like as they were in their cribs, and I would read, we would read them books every night as they would lay in their cribs and try to get them to go to sleep. We just started doing that. I would actually interchange the books with different pets. Like, that's how hardcore about the Constitution I was. So I disagreed with him.
Well, I mean, that's at least decent unschooling,
Yeah, but I was vehemently, I was all about the homeschooling already. I hadn't even heard of unschooling at that point when I met him, I don't think. I think that came shortly after I was introduced to Dana Martin, and I was like, what's this? I'm like, I need to be all about this. But then of course I had also had a better understanding of liberty, or, at least I thought I did at that point. I've definitely evolved even further since then, which takes us back to what we were talking about earlier about the whole, me resetting and you, both of us talking about talking to different people that in the past you may have said, I'm not even going to bother to talk to this giant collective of people because I've determined that their one idea or their overall idea or whatever it is horrible and I don't need to talk to them. But yeah, it's worked so much better now that I open up and do talk to these people.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I agree. I got shut off for a short amount of time, but it's been a lot better, and I think we definitely need that right now. And, as people who are trying to get a certain message across, I think that if we put our message out in a non-abrasive way. And I'm not saying like safe space it, you know what I'm saying? I'm just saying not be a jerk. If we do it in that way, then I feel like our message will stand out among the others right now that are just so petty and, you know.
Yeah, and it definitely matters how you couch these ideas too. Like you were talking about before, kind of disarming people right off the bat. You know, and as I said, that's a tactic I probably should employ too, because I had tried to tone down my rhetoric and I also try to not present the ideas in such an angry way like I used to, you know, like the angry anarchist phase I was talking about. I was definitely stuck in that for over a year where I would just yell at people about this stuff. But, you know, disarming them even further helps too, because everybody's, you know, no matter what their ideology is, everybody's got their guard up right now and everybody's itching for a fight, whether they realize it or not. They just, because everybody seems to have these preconceived notions about the quote unquote other at this point, whoever they're supposed to be ideologically opposed to, they have just the overwhelming majority of people have lumped their so-called opponents into these collectives because that's how they're conditioned. And it just makes it easier for them to focus on this one large group as a problem for whatever, even if it's just one reason, they make it the central reason. And then it's, well, of course we're going to be against these people. And just everybody has that against everybody else. So yeah, you definitely have to disarm people. And if you really want to make a change in that regard, I mean, I talked earlier about the fact that I'm trying to be all about solutions these days. And this is one of those solutions I see, or possible solutions, or at least things you could do to get towards a solution, is actually reaching out again, because I've shut down for a large time and not communicated. Like I went back in a hermit mode largely, other than just having my one-way conversations through these other outlets. But, you know, if you actually want to make things better, well, more minds have to be changed. That's just a reality you have to deal with. And most people disagree, or at least they think they disagree vehemently with your position on a lot of things. And it has to be explained to them why. And if you think, well, they disagree vehemently, so there's no point. Well, that's the overwhelming majority of people. If you can't reach any of them, then what hope do you have of reaching anybody? You know?
Yeah, exactly.
So it definitely helps to you know, open up and talk to more people and deal with people. You know, I say this, I've been saying this a lot lately, and I think it's a very valid point. The fact that it's so ironic that so many of these people that are dismissing these large groups, you know, for whatever it is, whether it's, you know, whether it's commies, leftists, SJWs, the right, the conservatives, whatever group people are dismissing, they're especially in our community, it's coming from people that are allegedly all about the individual, but they've gone back to collectivizing these giant groups of people based on most of the time one shared idea. And they're ruling out the fact that, like I mentioned earlier, you could have two people who identify as communists and they could believe wildly different things. But unless you actually have a conversation with them and try to understand where they're coming from, you're never going to know that. And one of those two people may be a lot easier to reach than the other one, because the wildly different ideas mean that the one person doesn't actually believe in communism as you see it. They just have that label in their head. But they may think wildly different things, and you know, but you have to deal with people on an individual level. And, you know, while I'm all about the action and trying to lead by example, which is why the big thing, you know, I'm trying to get out of the state, and the whole plan I have to attempt to get the Bison Ranch and hopefully the private needs special needs private school that we're a bunch of us are trying to get involved with the ranch and get up and running into, like doing all this type of stuff to lead by example. Yeah, that's, to me, that's very important. People definitely need to be able to shown. Actual solutions being implemented right now while under the current system, you know, to be able to say, oh, there is an alternative, because so many people are looking for an alternative. But if there isn't one, they'll just continue to accept the status quo, because the devil you know is better than the devil you don't, type of thing. But if you have a working model of something that in the now that you can show somebody, then more people are apt to go, oh, maybe this isn't such a crazy idea. You know, so, and I think that is desperately needed, but it's still needed for people to go back and actually have conversations with others and try to reach the people that you know, that make up the overwhelming majority of the population. You know, it's your biggest.
Yeah, this pool. Idea that we need to defoo everybody who isn't, you know, the purest of the pure anarchist is, you know, I hate to overuse the word, but counterproductive, you know.
You know you want to be a filmmaker. As Rick of Rick and Morty says, school's not a place for smart people. Nowhere is this more true than film school. Don't waste years and $100,000 being taught by those who couldn't make it. Just get a camera and a $7 Kindle version of $30 Film School 3rd Edition. $30 Film School 3rd Edition is the recent update on the classic 2003 book that helped spark the do-it-yourself filmmaking revolution. Written by DIY filmmaker Michael W. Dean, whose high-quality, low-budget movies star Academy Award winners and nominees, get worldwide distribution, and have been in many respected film festivals. The first two editions sold over 100,000 copies, and it's recommended reading in many colleges. The book is back, updated for today's high-def consumer cameras, but still has the same self-starter ethic and tips that no other book has. Get it delivered this minute to your Kindle or phone for only $7. Go to Amazon and type in $30 Film School 3rd Edition. That's $30 Film School 3rd Edition.
Yeah, but it's very counterproductive. It's a very apt word in that sense, because it's completely counterproductive. You know, that's why I've argued for quite a while. You know, I look at it, the dichotomy that has arisen in the liberty community on a large part. You know, here I am talking against people that have these horrible dichotomies in their head. Now I'm going to make one of my own. But if I'm going to make a dichotomy, it's the theorists versus the actual activists. Because there's a whole bunch of people that love to sit around and theorize and talk about how their ideas in theory are so great, which of course is ironic because it comes from, I pick on the ANCAPs a lot for this, because they are ironically, of course, say
the spooks.
Well, yeah, but they ironically say the thing about commies that's like, oh yeah, they always say it works great on paper. It's like, well, that's basically what you've done. You've got a theory that works great on paper, but you always leave out, well, at least a good, not all ANCAPs, I shouldn't say that, because I know Michael still identifies as an ANCAP, and I know plenty of people who still do, who I don't have a problem with, but like the hardcore, more alt-writers that in the ANCAP community, those ones.
The Hoppians.
Yeah, the Puritans.
The Hoppers.
Yeah, I call them the Puritans, and because in a lot of senses they are. They're the ones who call me a commie all the time. But those type of people, it's like, yeah, you've shut off from everybody, and ironically, you have a system that works great on paper, but you leave out the fact of reality in a lot of ways. And I've pointed out a lot of these situations, what realities they're actually leaving out, and they usually don't get very good responses. They, you know, kind of deflect a lot of the times because it's like, yeah, you're not, so shut up, you know. So action is important. But like I said, you still need to be able to go out and actually talk to people, and to also just dismiss giant swaths of the population by saying, oh, these people are unreachable. It's like, where were you a couple of years ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago? But like in a lot of instances, where were you 3 or 4 years ago? What was your thinking then? You know, because there's a lot of people who come to Liberty and Freedom on a, you know, daily basis. So last year, they were still hardcore statists. And that's actually a part of the angry anarchist phase too. I see a lot. I know I went through it too. And I realized the hypocrisy at one point. That's what actually made me stop, that I was yelling at people about doing that. It's like, oh, you can't reach these people. It's like, oh, wait a minute. I was those people a year ago. Duh. Of course you can reach these people. You know, same reason when anybody says that you can't reach leftists. I'm like, okay, I was a leftist. I have plenty of friends that were leftists for a good portion of their lives. Like, admitted,
I was a leftist until I realized what it was. Like, you know, I just thought it's like, oh, you know, like that's the people who want to share, and like those are the chill people that are rebellious and stuff. You know, like really, that was that is the, you know, I guess pop culture summary of what people think. You know, and it wasn't until especially during the Bush era and stuff, they played the anti-war game, you know? So at least somebody young and stupid, it was easy to believe at that point. But as soon as I was exposed to the fact that, you know, the police are the government, and also they're the ones who are going to enforce all these tax laws and stuff like that, and the tax laws are paying for all these things that, you know, the leftists and the people that I was reading at the time were promoting, I was like, wow, you know, this is deep, and I don't like this. And the other thing was, is I was like a mega conspiracy theorist, and I found out that Karl Marx was a 33rd degree Freemason, and I was like, oh man, I can't trust this fool.
Oh, that's so funny. Well, it's interesting. You know, you bring up the whole leftist thing. Although I'm looking at the clock, I think we're going to run out of time. We only got about a couple minutes left here. But I was actually just during that conversation I had with Mance Rader the other night. He actually brought up this article by Rothbard that I had never read before. That he wrote in like 65, something like that, about his ideas of the left and the right and how so many people are very confused about what they are. And you know, the fact that he was actually saying then something that I've heard a while back, and I thought about it long and hard, and then I went and looked, and I was like, oh yeah, they're actually right. And people, when so many ANCAPs especially get mad at when people claim that, you know, anarchism or libertarianism even actually is a leftist idea. If you actually look back in the history, it is, for the most part.
It is.
Like what traditionally leftist means, you know, because former fiend James Weeks used to make this point all the time. You know, the left and the right actually came from the French Revolution, and the leftists were basically the anarchists who were against the whole part of the king. You know, they were the ones trying to start the revolution. They were the ones that were against the state. So that's actually the beginnings of it. It was a leftist thing. Yeah, that, and you know, at least in 65, Rothbard resoundingly agreed with this, which I'm sure would blow the minds of many supposed Rothbardian or ANCAP who may not have ever read that piece. But yeah, man. So yeah, either way, I definitely identified as a leftist for a very long time. And, you know, like I said, I know plenty of other people who did too. So just even if you want to take the modern day left, right, how it's viewed in the U.S. right now and take it from those terms, I still know plenty of people who did identify as being on the left and they're now anarchists. Plenty of them either are ANCAPs or were at least some point, but are still like individualist anarchists like myself, you know, that type of thing. So it's like to say you can't reach the left as this monolithic thing is insane. And it's really a waste of time. You're wasting your time. You're wasting valuable time by not talking to these people. Anyway, on that note, we're going to have to get wrapping up. But John, this has been a lot of fun, man. And I promise not to delete this one. So this will actually get on the air sometime. So thank you, everybody, for listening.
Awesome.
This has been the Freedom Fiends. For more of us, go to freedomfiends.com. Worms.
Biptunia, music for the drive to Alpha Centauri. Biptunia's influences are Gary Numan, Brian Eno, Pink Floyd, David Bowie, Led Zeppelin, Grateful Dead, Frank Zappa, Robert Fripp, Blondie, Kraftwerk, and Dead Kennedys. Biptunia styles are trip-hop, rock, pop, glam, industrial, ambient, jazz, and space. Plus, it's got cats and is covered by the BIPCOT NoGov license. You can download Biptunia's music free. Go to biptunia.com. That's BIPTUNIA. Bravo, India, Papa, Tango, Uniform, November, India, Alpha. Biptunia.com.